justice that could be, and there is no greater justice in the world. I borrow those words from Abraham Lincoln because I truly believe in them, and because they are absolutely applicable to this case, where the jury found in favor of proximate cause.
What if the hospital had perceived that it had located the apologist in about the same time the brother arrived, and the brother said, "I've been taken to the hospital," would that change the proximate cause now?
Well, then they would have an argument for the jury for superseding intervening cause. His custody was taken over by the brother, and he was actually in his brother's custody, and they had released with a doctor's order, and they would have to have a doctor's order.
Okay, that's in fact exactly the same, except they would have been able to follow him, about the same time the brother got to the Howard Johnson, they arrived, and the brother said, "No, I'm going to take him to the call, I've called him to call."
No, Your Honor, he couldn't have been released into his brother's custody. It would have had to take a doctor's order to release him. The doctor's order would normally release him to the custody of another facility that's qualified to care for a patient who is suicidal, because he was diagnosed as suicidal and had a bipolar disorder and was in a major depressive episode. Now, they would have an argument about a superseding intervening cause that could go to the jury.
Once I voluntarily check myself into a hospital, if they make that diagnosis,
well, at least for a 24-hour period of time. There are certain limitations on it in the health code, Your Honor. As for a 24-hour period of time, at least, they're going to hold him, and then they'll check in again, find out whether or not he's out of his major depressive episode or whatever it was that was causing him to be suicidal. But it does take a doctor's order to release him from the psychiatric intensive care.
Is that statutory? Is that statutory, the 24-hour order that you're talking about?
Well, that's the standard by which West Oaks is going by. I believe it is contained in the health code, and I have to check for sure. And I can get back to you. I believe it's in chapter 574 or 572 of the health code.
Was it an intervening superseding cause question asked of the jury?
No, Your Honor, it was not.
So we would have to find that as a matter of law.
Yes, Your Honor, you would. And there is no evidence of superseding intervening cause. If there had been some challenge to the jury charge, they could raise it here, but they had not raised that any superseding intervening cause.
So in Kenyon Pope, he didn't say superseding cause. He said that the negligence of the person that had started the fire was injured, and that after the woman had put out, she'd been sleeping and putting out the fire was out, she was going to walk away with her. And he said that the negligence had actually come to rest. So why is that what happened here? The brother had taken charge, he talked to the patient,
well, first of all, the brother had never taken charge, and that is a matter for the jury as to what was done in that respect, and no superseding cause was requested. No,
I'm not
talking
about superseding cause. But we distinguish the concept in Lewis and in Union Pump, and we said there's a difference between superseding cause and proximate cause. And we said in Union Pump that the negligence, complete negligence, had come to rest at that point and was no longer the active cause of the injury.
Well, here West Oaks violated its duties, which were specifically designed to prevent the very injury which actually occurred. In Union Pump versus Albritton, this court ruled that it was too far attenuated. You have to compare the actual injury that occurs with the injury the defendant has a duty to guard against. In that case, the pump caused a fire. The pump did not cause a slip and fall.
So if he got hit by a car on the Southwest Freeway, would that be for the hospital to have?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's not suicidal, but he's not trying to kill himself, really. Well, he's not trying to kill himself, but he's trying to cross the Southwest Freeway and hit by a car. Would that be negligent?
Well, that's a matter for the jury, Your Honor. Negligence actually is not an issue here. It certainly is foreseeable that he could get hit by the car crossing the freeway when he's in a major depressive episode and he elopes from the hospital. That is a matter for the jury to determine.
But why wasn't it foreseeable in Union Pump that as she turned to walk away from the fire, she was on a wet substance on the pipe rack that was caused by the wheel?
It was foreseeable. I believe this court made the determination that it was too far removed. It was a couple of steps removed from the danger against which the defendant was to guard. the pump manufacturer caused the fire, that is, the pump caused the fire. What we normally consider in the fire is somebody being injured by the fire, somebody being injured at least on the property where the fire occurred, but here it is, away from the property, or when she's walking away from putting out the fire and she slips on some pipe that had some firefighting foam or water on. That is attenuated. That is merely creating the condition by which injury could occur. In the suicide context, what act or omission, short of murder, does more than create a condition by which the injury could occur? My answer to that is exactly what West Oaks did. It violated its duties, which were specifically designed to prevent the very injury which actually occurred. It violated numerous responsibilities, many of which could have prevented his death. And Dr. Splady's testimony was that he would still be alive today had they complied with their responsibilities. But since they did not, he died, and he died from the exact danger that was foreseen by the hospital. Precisely the danger.
What is the evidence of whether he could have been found as he died?
Well, Your Honor, we don't know, and that's something that, considering the evidence most favorable to Jones, which this court is obligated to do, we would have to say that if they had immediately searched for him within the period of time, which is an hour, that they're required to, with two people in a van, how should we assume that they could
not have found him? Have they found people in the past? What's the evidence about the efficacy of that search?
If they have been found in the past. I don't know that that was evidence in this case. The only evidence is that they did not attempt a search at all. The lady that let him go, Nurse Williams, merely went out into the parking lot and then came right back and didn't search for him at all. They did not comply with their policy that requires they search for him within a 1 mile radius of the van.
A mile radius is a pretty large area. And I just wondered if there was any evidence one way or the other at trial on whether you could find somebody in that distance. That's 2,000 acres in any event.
Well, you may recall, Your Honor, that he was actually out in the lobby. If they immediately gave search, they may well have got him before he got out of the parking lot. And if they hadn't left him, abandoned him in the lobby in the first place, which was against their policy, that they were never supposed to leave him alone for even 1 second, according to Nurse Blomstrom, as well as Assistant Supervisor Miller. Never leave him alone for 1 second, because he may get up. If they hadn't violated that policy, we wouldn't even be talking about what could have been done with regard to the search. But who knows? If they searched for him immediately, sure they could find him. Certainly that's a reasonable inference that the jury could draw. And this court cannot reverse this case unless reasonable minds cannot differ as to the conclusion that the evidence lacks probative force.
What would be, short of having to demonstrate an intervening cause, would a child care facility, if they're negligent in allowing the 3-year-old child to leave and the child disappears, short of proving an intervening cause, would there be automatic liability for any injury that happened to the child?
Not automatic liability, Your Honor. It would be a matter for the jury, depending on the circumstances of the particular case. And Your Honor stole my thunder. This is in my notes, the daycare facility analogy. It's a perfect analogy. If a 4-year-old child escapes the daycare facility through violation of many of their policies, and he wanders around for 6 hours until he's finally hit by a car or falls into a swimming pool and dies, West Oaks would have you believe that the daycare facility has absolutely no responsibility for his death because it's too attenuated.
But what if West Oaks was in the daycare facility and I found her? I went and searched for her, and I found her, and I found her in the lobby of the hotel, and I turned my back to her, called the daycare center, and say, I found her, and she walked out.
Possibly, given the other circumstances in the case, but that is a matter for the jury to consider. You would have control of your own child, and there aren't any statutes governing the release of your child to you. Anytime you come to a daycare center and say, I would like my child out, your child can be released. However, if Copper Jones had come to the facility and said, "I want my brother out," they'd say, "No."
I didn't go to that.
They
breached their obligation, and no question they were never there. Now I find my child, and I turn my back on my child. And if that's where they're never, neither of us would have been in that hotel lobby.
Then they would have evidence of the superseding cause, Your Honor. Evidence that you turned your back on your child. You had taken control of your child. You had released them from their obligation by calling them. And then you turned your back on your child.
I hadn't called them yet. I was on my way to call them.
Then that is one factor that a jury may consider in determining whether there is a superseding cause. But that is not an issue which is brought before this court. There is no allegation of a superseding cause here.
Well, that goes back to my question. Short of establishing a superseding cause, under these circumstances, the center would be liable for any injuries that occurred to the person that was in their care, whenever it happened.
Normally it would be, but if we're talking about 3 years later and the child is found living with his sister who had taken custody of him and he falls in his sister's swimming pool, then that is a matter that may be so far removed that the court could take it out of the hands of the jury. I would assert to this court that it still should be a matter for jury consideration because we should have confidence in their prudence and judgment. In that case, the jury would think, well, the sisters have this child for 3 years. That child was in the sister's control, not the daycare center's control. Even if they didn't search for him, it doesn't matter. The sister had him, and that is, again, another a matter for the jury to consider. And the jury would be prudent enough in that case not to hold the facility liable for that death because it would be too far attenuated.
The reference you made earlier to the ability to believe that the doctor's order is contained in the statute.
I believe it's contained in the health and safety code, but it was conceded in the record that he could not be released. It's not an issue at all that was raised by West Oaks. They conceded he could not be allowed out of the psychiatric intensive care unit without a doctor's order.
Would there be a difference if someone checks in for drug treatment, say cocaine abuse, and then goes to AMA, leaves the facility, and then subsequently engages in cocaine abuse once more and overdoses?
Would there be a difference in which respect?
In liability towards the psychiatric?
Well, under those circumstances, if he's admitted and he is detained by a doctor's order in the psychiatric facility and they allow him to depart, when it is against their policies and procedures to do so and against the standard of care to do so, and he gets out and snorts cocaine and kills himself, then you would have a matter for a jury determination, and this court should not rule as a matter of law that the facility is not responsible. In this case...
What measures did the hospital take once they realized he was gone?
Well, virtually none, Your Honor.
Well, what were they?
The only things that they did were at a certain point they called his brother. It's my understanding they called his doctor at some point. That's it. They went out into the parking lot. What they did not do was they didn't guard against him getting out of the psychiatric intensive care unit. They didn't monitor him. They didn't keep records every 15 minutes as they're supposed to do when he's in the psychiatric intensive care unit. They abandoned him against their own policies when he got out of that unit, when he's never supposed to be left for a moment. They did not escort him back to the unit as the policies require, and then they did not search for him once he departed the facility.
What should they have done other than the monitoring every 15 minutes to keep him from leaving the grounds?
Well, first of all, monitoring every 15 minutes isn't enough. Under their policies, they never let him out of their observation, not even when he goes to the bathroom, not even when he's in the shower, because he's in such a suicidal state. So what they should have done is never allowed him out of that locked psychiatric intensive care unit. He never should have left without a doctor's order, and they certainly should have known that he had left rather than just turning up in the lobby. I mean, what is admitted here is that the...
What if the cat's been evaluated for 2 days? He stayed at Howard Johnson for 2 days and then he called his brother and came with him.
That would be a matter for jury determination. The passage of time is one factor that a jury may consider in determining whether proximate cause exists. This court has held many times...
If he commits suicide 2 years later, we have a jury trial?
Again, that would, yes, you would have a jury trial, I believe, but I doubt that a jury would ever find in favor of the plaintiff. And we should trust the jury to do that. There may be circumstances, and during a two-year period of time, it'd be hard-pressed to not have some supervening intervening cause. This court has held that the question of proximate cause is a particularly apt question for jury determination because it is so fact-specific. And that's the reason why the jury, in its prudence, should be allowed to make that determination as to whether it is too far attenuated. The passage of time alone cannot be the determinative factor, and that's what they would have you believe, since they are without their argument that the distance could stop proximate cause or cause in fact, because their own policy requires them to search within that 1 mile radius where the suicide occurred. They are left only with the passage of time, which they say is the dispositive factor.
Well, what's the post in this case? And they were unable to find it. And then you did what you did. Would that change?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that would change it at all, because then they would still be responsible for allowing him to elope from the facility and get out of the psychiatric intensive without a doctor's order.
So once he gets out, they're liable indefinitely.
Well, not necessarily liable indefinitely. It's a matter for the jury to consider that it's a passage of time. I don't know if any jury...
Do you have family members in the facilities?
If you're taking to a different facility, then I believe they could have asserted a supervening, intervening cause as a matter of law. Then I believe the second facility may be on the hook, but I believe the first facility may be able to get out on a summary judgment because there was a supervening, intervening cause as a matter of law. Again, it would be a fact-specific determination that may go to the jury, but there may be no question of material fact with respect to the determination of supervening, intervening cause in that case, which is not an issue here. We are dealing solely with the six-hour passage of time when he was still in the same major depressive episode he was in when he left the facility. And remember, he was just checked in that same day, early that morning. So we're not talking about a long passage of time. At a minimum, he should have been held long enough so a doctor could have checked him out to see whether or not he was getting help with his medication and becoming balanced in order to care for himself. In a case where West Oaks has actually conceded that it violated the duties which were specifically designed to prevent the very injury which occurred, suicide, and it concedes in its briefing that it did in fact create the condition by which that very suicide could occur, it's preposterous that they claim that their actions and omissions were not a significant factor or substantial factor in the cause of the death. That is not the case of Albright. It's a direct link. The very risk they were to guard against was the suicide of this suicidal patient. They failed to exercise any of their responsibilities in order to guard against that suicide, and, of course, predictably, the suicide occurred. And any bright line test that's proposed by counsel assumes that a jury cannot be reasonable or just, that a jury cannot determine for themselves whether or not the facts are too attenuated or cause to exist. And the specific facts of the case are the key. Here, this court, I believe, with what has been conceded, could rule as an absolute matter of law, of course there was proximate cause, even if it didn't have a jury determination with what they conceded. But here we not only have a jury determination, but a unanimous Court of Appeals determination that there was proximate cause. Unless this court determines that Chief Justice Snyder, Justice Wilson, Justice Smith, Judge Austin, and all of those jurors did not have reasonable minds, it cannot reverse. And if this court holds for West Oaks, then psychiatric facilities can never be responsible for the suicide of their patients, which is contrary to all of Texas law and law across the nation.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.